All right. Today on the podcast, we have got Mr. Kevin Gammey. Now, Kevin might be well known to a few of you due to his role in Brisbane Small Business. But what you might not know is there's a fair bit to Kevin's story that goes through accounting and helping people launch their small businesses. The man is also a published author. And then more recently, dog beds. So, Kevin, mate, welcome.
Why, thank you.
It is lovely to have you here. I'm even more delighted that you came here on, well, what was pretty short notice.
Oh, look, that's okay. It's great to be here and thank you for inviting me.
So today we're going to find out a little bit more about the man behind the photo, behind the page. So for those of you that don't know, do you want to maybe even just start with Brisbane Small Business? Because that's where a lot of people might know you from. What's your role there?
Basically, Brisbane Small Business, a community of small business owners. Look, so we're starting in the middle, which is a great place to start.
I think so. It's a terrible way to tell a story, but what I'd like to do is start there and then jump back.
Cool. So Brisbane Small Business, I started it about 8 years ago, 9 years ago even, as a way just to connect, because small business can be a really lonely place. And I'd had a definite journey in small business and some highs and some lows. And as I moved on to the next phase of my life, I commenced Brisbane Small Business because I really wanted small business owners to have somewhere that they could connect, have as a safe place where they feel they could ask any question and not be judged for it, and that they could make any comment without fear or favour. So, and that's really what it was all about in the beginning is, you know, small business shouldn't be lonely.
Because for those of us in small business, it's pretty lonely. I certainly experienced a fair bit of that over the years.
Absolutely. And that can drive you stir crazy in one level. And not having anyone that you can ask simple questions to, because even at every single different level of your journey, and you mentioned that, you know, these days I sell dog beds, which, you know, is a bit of a funny story in itself. But, you know, I've all of a sudden gone into being a, you know, e-commerce, product salesperson, and I've never done that before. And so although I've got experience in business, I was really back at the very beginning again. And, you know, and so... I've learnt so much in that time period and have had so many different questions. And because of Brisbane Small Business, I've had people that I could either tap on the shoulder and reach out, or I could just ask the community, does anyone know? And it's a bit like Ask the Audience on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you know. You're not always going to get the right answer, but if you collect enough answers up in one certain area, you know that that's a good place to start.
That's it. You can generally get a broad consensus.
Yeah.
And Brisbane Small Business is obviously the reason that we connected. But what we're going to do now is pump the brakes on Brisbane Small Business because, again, that didn't just materialise out of thin air. There was a whole journey to get there. Yeah, now, I know some of your stories because I've put some time into your book, so I know some of these, so I can fact check you on it. But, mate, take me all the way back. Take me back to school. Were you a bad kid? Were you always an entrepreneur? Where was life going when you were a young bloke looking at the path ahead?
Oh, look, I was one of those kids that kind of wanted to forge your own path in a way. But originally, I wanted to be the boss more than I wanted to forge my own path. And I found that, I looked at what had happened in corporates to my father. He was, you know, quite high up in a corporate. Recession came, you know, politics happened. He got, you know, shoved out and kind of left by the wayside. And I'd seen that he had worked exceptionally hard. His work ethic was absolutely phenomenal. And I just, somewhere in the back of my mind, that didn't sit comfortably with me. I didn't realise that at the time. And it wasn't until much later on that I went, oh, here's why I've got this, you know, bee in my bonnet or whatever you want to call it, about big business. Okay. Sometimes I think that they're a law unto themselves and, largely unchecked.
And look, a lot of the time they are. You know, absolutely. It's one of my favourite things is I always enjoy that Yeah, like BHP turns over more than the Australian government. I've that one's made me smile for a while, and they can go, how much tax are you paying this year? And they're like, well, here's what we think. Let's negotiate.
At least they pay some.
Mate, absolutely. And I can't argue with them with that. But, you know, that is the reality of our world is, you know, the more money you make, the more control you have, the more influence you can push.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, for the people, I can really see that helps make a lot of sense. Like the fact that your father put all that work in and you saw him, I guess, get chewed up and spit out and, you know, tough shit.
Yeah. And you know, that gave him, you know, gave him a pause. He ended up restructuring his life quite early on and taking what would now be a lot of people go, oh, that's, you know, kind of logical. So he was in his mid-50s and he started working for, you know, what ended up equating to 9 months a year. So it was a combination of he was an accountant, so he went back to an accounting firm and he was working full-time in their busy periods, but then he'd work 4 days a week in their non-busy periods and still have holidays, right? So, you know, now it's all common. Oh, let's talk about the four-day work week. Well, my dad was doing that, you know, 30 years ago.
See, that was, yeah, work-life balance before anybody had even talked about it.
Yeah.
Far out. See, that's very clever. So that set you on a path.
Yeah, I guess it did. So, you know, look, I'm a typical 60s child. Look, I'm not a boomer. I'm Gen X, only just.
I say it feels like a stretch.
Only just. And, you know, and with that, we were starting to think about life differently from how our parents did. But we thought about it almost a complete opposite of how today's generation are thinking about it. And I've got to say they're much smarter than we are.
Yes.
We thought that you work your ass off and you'll get promoted. Well, can I say that? And you'll get promoted and think you'll be looked after. And so, you know, I did most of that. And I was doing very well in corporate careers until the recession in the early 90s. You know, I was already at, you know, I'd gone to uni on a part-time basis rather than going full-time. I'd gone to uni on a part-time basis. I started my career with IBM, which at the time they were the poster child of the 80s.
Absolutely. Right?
And so, you know, I was in the right places. I was, you know, working really hard, you know, busting my chops. And, you know, then once I decided that I'd had enough of IBM, and it was, you know, there was two streams within IBM, those who had joined after graduating and everyone else, right? And because I joined from school as a cadet, I wasn't involved in a different path. And when I wanted to move across to be part of that, they went, oh, look, you're doing really, really well, but we want you to stay where you're at. And it was like that didn't sit comfortably with me. You know, I've always been a bit of a rebel from that point of view and don't always fit everybody else's ways of doing things. You know, I left IBM. I went and worked at Unilever. You know, from Unilever, I'd gone on to work for a group called Computerland, which was selling computers, and they'd loved my IBM experience and everything. You know, from there, I'd moved into Wellcome Pharmaceuticals, which was, you know, so we've got in four different jobs, we've got three Fortune 500 companies. So, you know, I was doing and doing quite well, getting paid really well. Went into my fourth Fortune 500 company out of five with Rothmans at Pall Mall. And yet I'm an anti-smoker. But they just offered so much money. It was hard to say no. So
mate, that sweet tobacco money.
Mm. It was literally, you know, what I was earning at the age that I was 25 years old, had a company car and, you know, the world was really set. And yet I was really uncomfortable about being there. And so that lasted less than a year. Because I was, as I said, I didn't think about values and morals and all that sort of stuff back then. It was, hey, how much can you get? Because that's what you were chasing. But really what it was is I was working against my morals. Being someone who was, you know, largely anti-smoking and yet working for a cigarette company, and they'd kind of bought, well, they'd rented my soul.
They do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so that was, you know, when the recession hit, in the early 90s. We had that recession we had to have, according to Paul Keating. Yeah, I was a junior accounting manager and I was only 25 years old. So that was a pretty rapid career path back in those days, and I guess even for these days. And yet when the junior managers were all wiped out in that recession as everybody, you know, cut costs, it reconfirmed what had happened to my father.
Strangely similar.
Absolutely. And so, you know, when I was looking around for roles, but at the time, you know, unemployment was sitting at around, you know, I think unemployment got to almost 9 or 10% even at the time. And as someone who'd been an accounting manager, when you're applying for accounting jobs, they don't want to give them to you because, hang on, as soon as things turn around, you'll leave and go and get a management role. And that's how I ended up in recruitment, because I sat down, I went for an interview, and the recruiter just had an off-the-cuff remark, and she just couldn't believe my answer. She just – I used to have really bright red hair. These days it's really quite dull compared to what it was. And she said, "You've got the reddest hair I've ever seen." And my simple response was I didn't know what to say, so I just said, "Why, thank you." And so then we sat there and told jokes for an hour, and she rang me back after and said, "Could you see our state manager? I'd want to see if you would work in this industry." And I hadn't thought about that up until then. But I thought, hey, look, I've met lots of recruiters who I know I could be better than, so, yeah, let's give that a bill. And then that was the next 20 years of my life was in recruiting.
Now, obviously, you didn't just work for other people in recruiting.
No, well, I started off once again. So, you know, the succession of Fortune 500 companies comes along. I went and worked for Adia, which were, you know, actually it was Adecco at the time, and they merged, or it was Adia at the time, they merged with Echo and became Adecco. You know, strangely enough, nobody knows their accounting brand. There was one for a short period of time. And working for them, you know, within 18 months I'd become their recruiter of the year. Got sent on overseas conference and everything else. They sent me to Queensland. I was a Sydney boy. Still do support the Blues, so sorry to all those Queenslanders out there. It is state of origin I keep coming back to, and you have to have two teams. So I came to Queensland, set up a business for them. We were the only profitable, another 18 months in or 2 years in, we were the only profitable branch around the country of that brand. And, you know, I didn't agree with the direction that the new managing director of that organisation wanted to take it. And so that's when I made the choice to leave and set up my own business, and that was in 1999. And I ran that business, you know, through until 2012. We'd grown to be a $3.5 million business at our height, and then we had another recession that we had to have in the GFC. And I've got to be honest, that knocked me around. It really did. From going from, you know, a $3.5 million turnover to, you know, less than half a $1 million turnover. At the height, we had more than 15 staff. We had 350 square metres on Queen Street Mall. And all of a sudden, our turnover has just been decimated. I think our rent ended up equating to more than 80% of our turnover at one stage. So we did sublet out a whole lot of the building, but, you know, probably at 50% what we were paying. But at least that alleviated and helped, but that really played funny games with me.
And look, I'd love to try and dig into this a little bit, because this is the part of small business that gets glossed over. And I'm interested to talk to you about that time.
Sure.
And how you felt at that time. And just what you went through. I'm really... And mate, I know it's not a pretty story, but I think that's why it's so important to talk about.
Sure, it's not a pretty story. Yeah, look, we had to let go of staff. Some left naturally because they weren't earning what they were before. It seemed like clients were absolutely taking advantage of the situation, and I guess they're trying to do the right thing for their business. But I was just getting angrier and angrier with every single facet of everything. And, you know, when recruitment, a lot of recruitment is run on a contingency basis. So you work your butt off and then you see if you get paid at the end. The challenge was that clients would traditionally only have a job with anywhere between one and three, maybe four suppliers, but all of a sudden they were shedding it out to 5 to 10 suppliers, and you couldn't keep your head above water on that situation. So when the GFC first started, it was unlike anything that we'd truly experienced in our life, in our lifetime. It wasn't like the 90s recession. It happened hard and fast. There was a lot of rumours that it was going to bounce. So, you know, we poured a lot of money back into the business, or I poured a lot of money back into the business. You know, we lost over $250 million in that year. And that was largely because I tipped money back into it. You know, believing that if or that when we had the bounce, because everyone's talking there's going to be a bounce, it can't just fall off a cliff and not come back. And we didn't get that bounce. In the recruitment world, we were at the time that it happened, so in October 2009, we had three different divisions. We had an accounting team that did some work in chartered, and they did some work in general commercial accounting. And that went from, you know, your clerical staff right through to CFOs and the like. And at every level of an accounting firm, we had a admin team that looked after, you know, general administration. And we had a technical team that was looking at, you know, largely the mining industry and things, right? We shut down all but the accounting division, under the belief that nothing's surer than death and taxes. And with that, all the jobs that would be that were lost to the accounting industry would come back. However, with the rise of technology meeting everything at that time period, that a lot of jobs were shifted offshore and they never came back. And so there wasn't the bounce in the accounting industry jobs that we were expecting. And so that meant that, one, we'd held on to a lot of staff for too long. As when we did let them go, you know, that meant that we couldn't bounce as quickly as we'd like at the end of it. By the end of that time period, you know, I was pretty damaged from, you know, and just over everything in reality, but holding on because it was a skill I had. Was that I could recruit. Look, what I've learned since, one of the challenges I had with recruitment, or I had with recruitment personally, was that I found recruitment at worst not difficult when I was on the tools. And the things I learned through my coaching and consulting training that came up was that, you know, I was constantly going, that's why that works, right? Because it just came second nature to me. I just worked it out on the fly. You know, we were dealing with accounting, and accountants love details, right? And, you know, in that other training, then I was learning about personalities. I didn't know anything about personalities, you know, and the four different types of people and all that sort of stuff going into it. But I knew accountants love detail, but as soon as they got stuck on detail, they lost the opportunity for the job because they were too busy talking about the wrong stuff. And so, you know, accountants would be asking me for job descriptions. I go, yeah, well, no. And they go, they would say, you're not going to give me a job description. I said, well, let's not worry about the job. Let's worry about the career path and how and what you're looking to achieve, and let's focus on that so you can focus on that in the interview. And here's why a lot of my people get the job. Because I steered them away from the things that was going to be a danger to them, and just by accident. You know, I'd also make sure that the client felt like they knew the candidate even before we walked in the door, and that the candidate felt like they knew the client. So when they finally met, it was like, you You know, it's like if you've got, you know, a new mate coming to the pub and he's going to meet your regular guys. If they know a little bit about him beforehand, they all get on like a house on fire, right? They've all got something in common that they know you, and the worst case scenario is they sit there and, you know, put shit on you for the time, right? But at least then they get on because the relationship's got off on the right foot. So I was doing those sort of things without knowing why, just by accident. So, you know, when – so after a couple of years of the GFC, I couldn't pick myself up anymore. And I knew that my time, I just had it. I was hating candidates, I was hating clients, I was hating everything. And the reality is it was none of their fault individually as people or anything like that. It was all what was in my head. But I didn't realise that at the time. But one thing I did realise, I needed a change. And so, you know, fortunately, you know, I was able to get that opportunity. I'd gone along and seen a coach to help me get over some of those challenges. After about 3 months, I started to get a glimmer of my sense of humour back. Still just a glimmer. We're still working on that. But it's a constant improvement process, isn't it? And and I decided, look, what I want to do is I want to help people, but I don't just want to help everyone. I want to help small business owners. I probably should have narrowed that down further, quicker. But that's what started the Brisbane small business journey, is the fact that I wanted to make sure that people knew they had somewhere to reach out and to give people a community that they could belong to, so that they wouldn't go as deep into dark places.
And that's probably the Band-Aid I want to rip off with you. Like, how bad did that really get? I mean, because, look, the reason I ask these questions is I've been there. I've stared into the abyss, and it was my work that drove me there. You know, I've stared into the dark, and the dark has stared back at me.
It did go pretty bad. One night I was sitting on the back deck of my place and with my dog, Angus, and I guess I've got to thank Angus for saving my life, because I was sitting there doing sums on who would get what if I didn't exist. And I went, well, hang on. And I caught myself quite quickly, but that's how low it was.
And I think this is one of the conversations that, you know, you don't get enough of in small business is, you know, I've had those same conversations with myself going, I think the world would be better off. And fucking hell, mate, I'm glad I found a way through that, but I only found a way through that because I talked about it.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't feel I had anyone to talk to about
Correct.
That.
Correct. You don't.
And that's, you know, we, even within Brisbane Small Business, we did try and have an offshoot called Roar and Roar, but that just got, with everything else, got too hard to run and to manage. And so we weren't able to continue with that. We've done lots of we've tried lots of different things to get community engagement and involvement, and some things have worked and some things haven't. It's a short answer, but it is an important factor for people to be aware of where they're at, and also be aware that there is help out there.
And the other thing I came to discover, and I'll be interested to know if you've had a similar experience, was something that, you know, that I hear all, you know, the fake it till you make it type stuff. You know, slap your smile on, you know, everything's okay no matter what's going on, you know, one foot in front of the other. Whereas what I've come to discover is that in being more vulnerable, in letting some of those guards down and going, well, actually, no, it is really hard at the moment. There's a few things that aren't great and I'm actually not sure how I'm going to fix it. Allowing myself to not have all the answers, and I saw somebody write about this recently, you know, the capacity to ask for help. That's actually really hard to do, particularly when you're trying to build something and, you know, you might not have any money in the bank and you might not have any clients or you might have like one client and $1,000 and be going, ha, 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 yeah, it's going great.
Yeah, look, it's – I don't subscribe to fake it till you make it. Very good. I also, you know, and I guess I haven't worn my heart on my sleeve either. I've been somewhere I have been somewhere in between. I believe that yes, you should be asking for more help, and I didn't ask for help. I should have asked for more help, and I get that. And I do get that if I had have asked for help, I would have got more help. So it's one of those things. I do fully appreciate that wherever I am, and it, all along this journey, I've gone, I'm here because of all the choices I've made. And that's not to beat myself up, but it's there to let me know that I could make different choices.
I think that it's a really good place to start from. Mm. I really do. And having experienced the range of things that you have, because something that I have found frustrating in business is a lot of people that give advice that potentially haven't had the crap kicked out of them. And it's very easy to regurgitate good advice. You know, good advice is pretty easy. What to do is pretty easy. You know, there's plenty of self-help and how-to and all those things. But it's not until you get the living shit kicked out of you and you're on the fetal position, not sure how to pick yourself up or if you want to, and you do pick yourself up and you do go again and you do try it, and that's someone I want to listen to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of those things. If life has always been easy, you don't know what it's like not to be easy. And here's the challenge I have with so many people coming from corporate or that have never been in small business going, oh, I'm a small business expert. Well, okay, what made you a small business expert? And then going, but it's just the same as big business, but it's small. But it's not. It's a completely – you are playing a different game. It's not the same game.
They are not the same. And when the dollars are your dollars, not someone's budget, not something you've had to just, you know, put your spreadsheet in for and then get, you know, get an allocation. But when it's your dollars and you have to go, am I eating this week, paying my car registration, putting fuel in, or paying my phone bill? I'm not sure. I can do one and I need to do seven.
Mm. Yeah, much more challenging.
Very different to corporate where you just forward it off to accounts.
Yeah. And on the other side, when you're looking at the other side of it and not just the stress of account side, you're looking at how you can grow your business, it is a series of tipping points. And if you've always been in corporate, you don't understand those different tipping points. It's very challenging to employ people to do stuff when your cash flow sucks and you can't afford them. And so you've got to get to that tipping point where you can start paying stuff to free up more of your time to do higher value stuff and everything else. So it's, you know, fortunately these days, you know, back when I was recruiting, people largely came in 40-hour blocks. Okay, you wanted someone to do accounts, great. Here's an accounts clerk. And they come in, you know, a full week. These days you can hire people in, you know, by the hour basically, and with their task or even less. So the opportunities we have today are vastly different. It doesn't make it any easier, but it makes it in a way simpler because there is that opportunity to buy much smaller chunks and to get the skills you need in for a particular project.
Significantly lower risk. That's the way I see it, is you can test things without having to employ somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you can dance in that pool, and as you said, you can sort of farm out bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Depending on what you need. So talk to me about what you were up to here. Where are we in time when Brisbane Small Business kicked off?
So I was looking at I had started a consulting business. Mm. Okay.
So and consulting business came first.
Yeah. So the consulting business came first. I was doing my studies, and as I was doing my studies around that, I was still working in the recruitment business at that stage. And it was just as I was making a decision that I couldn't continue in the recruitment business because I just hated every single day. I was doing 3 days a week there and 2 days on the consulting, and then I started Brisbane Small Business at that stage. And as I said, I trialled running Facebook community, LinkedIn community, Meetup communities. I was promoting stuff on all of them, and the one that I got the most traction from was the Facebook community, and that's why we're primarily a Facebook community.
In those early days, what was it like?
Oh, it was a bit of the Wild West. Look, I didn't know what I was doing. So even today, I'm not a Facebook expert. It's quite funny when I have talked to different people around projects, around doing some marketing for Brisbane small business and stuff, and they're going to use social media, and they go, "Oh, you can do the rest." And I said, "No, I can't." And they said, "What do you mean I said, "I don't know how. You know, all I know is how to lead a group." You know, and look, it took 10 months to get any traction at all. It took 10 months to get 100 people into the group, because back in 2014, people thought about Facebook very differently to how they do today. They thought it was just family and friends, and you know, people would share, you know, similar stuff to what they would share today in a sense, but they weren't doing stuff about their business. That was, you'd go to LinkedIn for that. But I wasn't getting the traction in LinkedIn. So, you know, so with that, I went, okay, well, I'll continue on with the Facebook community. And slowly, I can remember we were getting, you know, I can remember in about the, I think it was about the 8th or the 9th month, we had 20 people come along in the month. And I went, oh, well, that's okay. At least we're starting to get some traction there. And then all of a sudden we're getting 20 a week. And then we're getting 50 a week. And then we're going... So, you know, it didn't happen as a massive explosion. I'm not I still don't know all the tricks and tactics that I should be using. and I'm sure you sometimes faceplant when you see some of the things I do on social media. But it's been a journey, and it's been a learning experience. And it's, you know, we went with the GFC, with COVID, we went into COVID, we had 8,000 members. A year later, we had 12,000 members. You know, we're 2 years later and we've got 20,000 members. So the one thing that I focused the community on, and made sure that the leadership team focused the community on, was to be a safe environment and an environment of truth. We weren't prepared to let, anti-vaxxers take control. We weren't prepared to have people make them feel guilty either. It was, hey, that's your decision, what you want to do there. And, you know, we don't know the exact science behind it. I'm not a doctor. My extensive medical experience doesn't let me know what is absolutely right or wrong. So I said, we're not going to make a call on who's what. However, both sides... You can't be judging the other side, because we're no longer going to have these fights.
No, it's not the place for it.
It wasn't. You know, we tried to work with with councils and governments, but they didn't want to help us out at all. They wanted to in spirit, but you know, not financially. But that doesn't work. And so we said, look, we just can't work with you. At the end of the day. Funny how a lot of people in government positions who are sitting there in a comfortable, well-paid job want to try and guilt you into promoting their cause for free because, oh, but this is a good initiative. And I just said, we can't do that. You know, if you want our support and to promote your agenda, you need to support us. You need to treat us like it's advertising dollars. And they just couldn't get their head around that. And I guess that's my fault for not explaining it better. However, at the same time, you know, they didn't really try to look at it from any other point of view than we just want it for free.
That makes it hard.
Oh, it did. It did.
I guess it still does to this day.
Look, it just means I'll go down a different path, really.
And Brisbane small business was obviously something that you used to build up your own business at the time, and because it was obviously a way to help, you know, reach out and meet new people. And tell me about that time, because again, this was starting again from scratch.
Yeah, it was, and I got to say it. Running Brisbane Small Business was a bit of a double-edged sword because, you know, I held everyone accountable to the rules that are there, and everyone wants to befriend you so that they can break the rules. And then when you don't let them break the rules, then you're the worst person in the world. You know, the number of times I've heard people, you know, one day say, "What I love about this group is the high standards that you have and the community that you've got, and it's not full of spam." And then the next day they're abusing me because I've just stopped them putting up an ad. And it's, I've taken a fair bit of, let's call it feedback, would be the most polite way you could put that, for running Brisbane Small Business. I've been judged on every single level from different sections of the community, from different times. And I'm sure if I was a different person, you know, it'd just be water off a duck's back. But you know, I'm someone who does take stuff to heart, and that didn't sit well. And I guess that's what ultimately really did exhaust me at the end of the day. So you know, and that's where you know that consulting journey, because I wanted to help small business owners, and a lot of them just want the information for free. And that was a challenge in itself, finding owners who went, "Hey, if I'm going to have someone that can help me grow my business significantly, going, well, there's value in that." And people want the advice and they want the accountability, but they don't want to pay for that. And that's where we got to a stage where I can't be all things to all people and help everyone for nothing. I've got to go out and do my own thing. And that's where I just started giving myself my own advice. And I was running a group and to help them over a six-month time period, you know, restructure and kick their business into gear. And as part of that, they all had a project to do. And after that all determined exactly what their project was, they said, "Well, Kevin, what's your project?" And I said, "Well, my project is to look after you guys." And they said, "Yeah, that's not enough. How about you do the dog beds? Because it seems like a good idea." And so out of that challenge, you know, came Chewproof Dog Beds. We've been doing it as a hobby for a couple of years. Look, Chewproof came about because I had a dog that was destroying beds. It was a beagle and it was a beagle pup. So it was all of about, you know, the size of a football, and yet it was destroying beds faster and more accurately than each time. So he got it down to it would take 2 weeks. His record was the Kmart chew resistant dog bed that lasted 2 hours. But a typical hammock bed he could destroy in a week, it got down to.
It's pretty impressive.
And I was sick and tired of buying dog beds and just, you know, donating money to pet stores. And I had walked into so many pet stores, it's not funny. I was hunting on the web and couldn't find anything. And so then I went, it can't be this hard. Surely if I need this, yes, I could potentially be Australia's worst dog trainer, and that I'm still vying for that that award. But I can't be the only one. And so I went, great, I'll buy 100, I'll see what happens. And it took us about a year to sell that 100. And the next batch that we bought took about half that time, and we found in and I was making it really hard. Like, I hadn't set up a proper e-commerce site. I just set up a series of what was ultimately a series of landing pages, so people, if people wanted a large bed and a medium bed, they had to do two transactions, and it was really awful. And when this group challenged me to do it properly, I went, okay, I'll do it properly. I'll, you know, get the website redone. I'll actually get, you know, WooCommerce, and we'll start building it up. And over a period of a very short period of time, sales were just, you know, going vertical. It was quite incredible. And partly thanks to your pushing and encouragement when you said, "Mate, you just got to advertise it on Google." I went, okay, you know, how much have I got to spend? Oh, $5 will do. We'll at least test it. And it just went off. And we basically sold more in 6 weeks than we'd sold in the previous 18 months.
Who would have thought? Solve people's problem.
I know. Who would have thought that?
And then
if you
tell
have
them about
a
it.
Very clear problem, and letting them find out. I know. It's incredible.
It's astonishing, this marketing stuff. It's you know, it's like, yeah, it's like launching rockets. It's very complex.
It is rocket surgery, I swear. So the Tubeproof journey's been really quite interesting. Then we had all the challenges of supply chain and everything else as our sales were starting to go up, and we got invited to ECCA last year. So we started taking it seriously less than 18 months ago.
That's what I've noticed. It feels like it's only been the last 12 months that you've really, really knuckled into it.
Oh, well, that's it. So what happened with this, with that, we decide, hey, there is absolutely a serious business here. We went from last year, even with not being able to get stock for 3 months of the year, we still sold 10 times what we did the year before. And as a hobby, and so we'd sold $20,000 the year before, and then over 200 last year.
Pretty good jump.
Pretty good jump. This year we've already done well over 100. We've just had 1,000 beds land or 1,000 frames land. We now look. The other thing that we did was we looked at how could we support local industry and how could we be, part of that manufacturer community. We've been able to get the mats manufactured here in Australia now. In fact, in Brisbane. There's joy in that and challenge, because it does increase your cost quite significantly. I could get a very similar mat at less than a third of the price of what I pay. And when people push back on price, even when you're talking, well, why do you want to work with us? Oh, because you've got an Australian, because you're trying to help us support Australian business. Great. But can you make it cheaper? Well, no, you can't, is the short answer. And so we've worked our way through that, and we're basically building a quality brand that's known for that. We've partnered up, and we've been very fortunate. I've got to say that all my time putting into building the small business community, it means that I've met a lot of people over that time period who have given me very generous support. At either cut rate or free of charge, and I'm humbled by it. It's helped give me opportunity now that had I not been running that community, I wouldn't have today. I wouldn't know all these people. I wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know, and I've gone through a series of phases or a series of learning experience and tipping points with the business already, and I'm constantly finding new ones. Every time I think, yes, I've nailed that. Oh, damn.
Here's a new improved problem that you haven't solved yet.
That's it. You duck the left hook only to get a jab to the right side of your face, whatever that analogy would be. But it's been a great journey. And look, we were very fortunate in that the RSPCA in Queensland were having challenges with their supplier. And they called me up. I went out to see them, and they just loved the fact that we wanted to help solve their problem, that we had local product. Particularly, we're trying to do is what we could on the local product side, and they really appreciated that. And we became the preferred supplier to the Queensland RSPCA, which was, in the whole pet care industry, you can't ask for greater endorsement. So that was fantastic.
It's pretty special, and it's it's hard earned. And I think that this is a lovely story. Because, you've done a lot of things and you've had a lot of wins, but, you've copped a fair belting on the way, and it feels to me like you've refined your idea of business down and you've distilled everything you've learned into this business. Would I be close?
Look, it's still a constant improvement process, and that's always going to be the case. As I said, I'm working in an industry that is so foreign to me.
That's often a good thing, though.
Oh, absolutely. But then having to manage stock and delays in stock getting to you whilst you're on a growth curve, but still an uncertain growth curve because of everything that's happening, It creates its own, that in itself creates its own challenges. You know, we've had we've been working with some different groups and communities that had some exciting projects on their books, but then, you know, we're working with a particular rescue group and that basically used up every last favour they have to build a new kennel, which meant that they couldn't afford our beds to put in the kennels, right? So, you know, woke up one day and lost an order of 100 beds. Now, you know, that costs, that hurts.
That tickles.
So, you know, but one step forward, you know, two steps back. But we're really going, we are continuing to go forward. We've got, you know, a rep here in Queensland. We've got one down in Victoria. They both work on a commission, so they both work on a part-time basis for us and doing that. That's complemented with myself. We've got a telemarketer. We've got admin helping us out. You know, I've got great support from some financiers, and you know, I get some, you know, some awesome marketing advice from time to time from a friend of mine, which is really great. We're able to afford now some specialists in that e-commerce sector to help, you know, guide us past some of the things, so we don't have to hit every iceberg on the way. You know, sometimes we feel like we've done that. So,
and it's amazing how many icebergs you can jump when you throw money at a problem.
Yeah, and it's not been a huge amount either. That's the thing. So, you know, that's where we've been really, really fortunate, is that people have seen, you know, how I've helped. They've seen the community that we lead and how it's run, and they really appreciate that, and they want to say thank you. So, you know, I'm very grateful for that.
Well, you've earned that, and it's a comment that I make to people, particularly people that I put effort into and that I have supported along the way, is I watch people, and you watch what they do and you watch how they interact with other people, and you just double check. And, you know, you can tell a lot from a person by what they do, because it's very easy to say the right thing, but you watch people long enough and you see whether or not they do the right thing. And I guess that's my reflection on you, is I watch you do the right thing time and time again by people. And that's a credit to you, mate.
Well, it's just part of my philosophy, isn't it?
It is. That's your North Star.
That you should, you know, you need to do the right thing by people.
And I've seen that. And I think that's the lovely thing. And I do think that that's why, you know, why the community has become so strong, why it stayed on course, though, even though it's sort of moved and done all its different things, it has retained that ethos because, and you know, you'd know this, that, you know, it comes from the top down. You know, you can't build that from the bottom up.
Oh, absolutely not. And it is something that, you know, it's taken, I've nearly thrown it in a number of times. But each time I've gone, you know, so many people need it. And so I've had to find a new way of doing something. So we've tried to, one of the things, and my very strong belief is that small business really, and here's the challenge, small business really need access to quality knowledge and education. But I've learnt so few of them are prepared to pay for it.
Correct.
And that's one of the challenges. So I've built a number of different opportunities around helping people get very cheap access to awesome knowledge, and yet people haven't invested in it. And so it's been one of my, it has been a frustration, but I go back and look, well, hey, I didn't completely test the market before I did that. So anything that's happened is on me. And whilst there's still that opportunity there somewhere, I don't know what it looks like at this stage.
I must say, though, and this is just me from the outside looking in, I think that as you allow Brisbane small business to sort of flourish under its own steam, and while you work on your brand, and while you build Chewproof and just allow it the room to breathe, that I think it has its it has an opportunity there to actually start, I guess, organically becoming something different.
And that's and look, that's something I've been very focused on as well. So look, absolutely. If Brisbane Small Business is a garden, right, and it is, one, I want it to be a garden of positive energy. But the garden wouldn't have even existed unless we cultivated the land and the area first. And we've done that. And it's the way I view it now is that, hey, we're able to get, you know, gardeners to come in and help out. So, you know, today we've got Amanda Rosasa is running Brisbane Small Business for me. Not for me, for the community. And she, you know, it's only really recently that she's taken that role on, and she gets a little overwhelmed when I say, it's yours, right? You can do with it what you will. And I act more as a CEO rather than a managing director now, where I, you know, it's, you know, we're still in that transition phase, and every day Amanda's learning a little bit more that when I say you can do whatever you want, you can do whatever you want. So it's exciting to watch some of the ideas that she's got, and it's exciting to see the enthusiasm that she's got for it. Because it's something that, you know, over a period of time, you know, things that were really awesomely enjoyable can become more mundane and routine and sometimes not that enjoyable. And so it's great to see someone at the start to go, this is awesome, and to bring that energy back to the community. And that's what I'm really excited about, is to see the energy come back to the community again.
And I must say I've been really excited to see that energy in the group as well. It's wonderful to see somebody, I guess, picking it up and running with it like that, because it needs that. And as you said, you know, over time things, you know, it can become a lot.
Yeah.
And particularly, you know, when you're carrying the weight of it as well, and, you know, you're known as the face of it, you know, there's a downside to that. Whereas having somebody who doesn't carry that baggage, isn't aware of all the little ins and outs and stories and things that have happened over time, she has the opportunity to come in and, I guess, continue that legacy, but then also make it her own, put her own stamp on it.
Absolutely. And I'm excited for the things that we're discussing in there at the moment, and the energy she's looking to put behind a couple of ventures about how we can help those people that want to help themselves, how we can help people grow their business and for it to be whatever they want. That doesn't have to be a small business, or it can be. It's up to them on what they want to do. So, you know, there's some exciting developments coming along on that front. And the next year, I think, is going to be a really exciting time.
Fast forward 10 years in the future, what would you like Brisbane Small Business to look like?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question, not one that I've really thought of. I personally got so stuck in the day-to-day that I lost that vision for the future. And I guess, you know, at the moment I'm enjoying having a hiatus of not needing to have that vision for 10 years in the future. I'd love it to the reality is I would love it to be Australia-wide. Or for it to reach Australia-wide. I'd love it to still have that very local sense wherever it is. So, you know, I would like it to be more a networking club so that people are truly connecting. And I guess my focus is on creating engagement between businesses. And so if I can help connect businesses right around the country with that as the vehicle, that would be absolutely awesome.
I can see that. We might have to work on the name. That makes it difficult, doesn't it?
Look, we'll just do a KFC and become BSB.
BSB?
Very KFC. Special business.
Very special business.
No, berry.
Very special. Very special.
We'll be a bit Elmer Fudd there.
Yeah, because I was trying to figure out how we could do that. And like, yeah, because how we could make BSB Australia-wide and Or you could just change it to BSB and people go, what does BSB stand for? And you're like, don't worry about it.
For a long time, we were denying F was for fried, weren't we? So,
mate, F is for fantastic. Did you know there's a KFC across the road? It's surprisingly convenient. It's actually a very dangerous place to work here. I'm really interested to see where it goes because when and obviously this is full disclosure, I'm involved with Brisbane Small Business, not in a financial sense, but in a supporting sense that, you know, I give my time to that organisation. This feels like paid product placement now. But, you know, I come from very much the same vein as you where, you know, I have worked in big corporate and did quite well quite young, but then also realised that it sucked because I too like to make the decisions and I wasn't really good at doing what I was told. I was much better at doing, whatever I thought was right. And that was what really inspired me to start my own show because I thought, look, for sure somebody will like these ideas. And I've had a very long, lonely journey.
Yep.
I found it very isolating. I found, you know, I was so excited to tell people about what I was doing. But what I found was that people were overwhelmingly negative about what I was doing and like that's a bit risky, not a good time to start a business. Because I actually started my business in 2007. So bang, GFC, terrible time. Terrible time to start a marketing business, let me assure you. And I found it a really shit process. Like I found it really, like really lonely, really hard. And for a really, really long time, like it took me way longer to make this thing profitable than most people would bother, you know, continuing. And look, I'm nowhere near. I'm 14 years in now. And honestly, today, I feel like a young man who feels like he's only just getting started. Like, you know, I got fire in my blood these days. I like to share the things that I've learned because I remember for years and years and years just desperately wishing that I had some sort of mentor, somebody to talk to, somebody to ask questions of, somebody to say, fucking hell, what is going on? And I desperately wanted that. And I did end up paying some business coaches. And oddly, their advice was super helpful. Less helpful, some of the advice I didn't want to hear. And so, you know, I wasn't ready to hear some of it because some of the advice you receive is pretty rough. But when I was sort of suggested the opportunity to talk to you guys and I guess be interviewed was what I felt grilled coming in for a leadership, for an unpaid volunteer leadership position in Brisbane Small Business. I went through, I think, two or three interviews with you guys grilling me to come in and provide that help.
Oh, look, I'd made some mistakes along the way, so I wanted to make sure we weren't going down the same road again, and I guess that was part of it. One of the challenges, as you know, and you work on a number of volunteer things, and you give 100% everywhere you are, and I know that. I know that today. Beforehand, I didn't know that. And what some of the mistakes I'd made is I'd said yes to everyone too easily. And then if things are too easy, then people take it for granted. And so, you know, and that had caused me more angst and pain than it had, you know, and it actually relates to a post I put in Brisbane Small Business Today, and it was around the support that you have within your business, and it's there to help you save time or make money. And if it's not doing either of those two things, then it's not really support for your business. So, you know, as a small business owner, it's quite easy to get caught up in the niceties and not forget that at the end of the day, this is here to save your time and make your money. And if you're not doing that for your clients, if you're not solving their problem, then you shouldn't be there. If you're getting support, it needs to support you, not add more work for you to support them. And that was, you know, that's why at that stage I'd gone through asking for help from a number of people, and they'd all been there with good intentions, but they all had kind of wanted to help when they felt like it. And as we know, in business, that doesn't work. It doesn't help you grow your business. And if Brisbane Small Business is a business, which it is, then it needs people who are focused on doing a particular job and not just coming in and playing with it and doing just the things they want and not the other stuff. And I guess I'd gone down that road too many times.
So that explains my grilling.
Yeah.
On the way in. But see, interestingly, like even down to what we're doing here right now, this wouldn't exist if it weren't for my involvement in Brisbane Small Business.
Oh, you've added value, absolutely. You've brought a different feel to the community. And everybody that's been on the leadership team has done that. They have all brought in a different element, and everyone's brought in a positive element. The challenge that I've had is that I haven't held a high enough standard on coming in with everyone. And so whilst they've added a positive element, not everybody has done so consistently. And that's been the challenge. So that's where, you know, we're changing and we're learning from that. And you know, with passing the baton, we're also passing on our lessons. And I'm still there supporting Amanda, as opposed to Amanda being there to support me.
And I think that's probably key to all of this. And that's, I was actually saying this to a young fella that I'm supporting a bit, because, you know, I've got a couple of people. I try to be that mentor that I wish I had.
Yep.
So in particular, when I meet people in their 20s that are getting going in their career, I've got a handful of people that I help specifically.
Awesome.
Because I see them putting in the work.
Yep.
And again, I make a judgment based on their attitude and their effort as to whether or not I support them with both my time and my money.
Yep.
A lot of people can be good for a day, a week, a month, but it is very rare to see people that can be good month in, month out, year in, year out.
Yep.
And I have found that that is the difference, because I'm rarely the smartest man in the room. I'm, you know, not real bright if you put it all together, but I will outwork anyone.
Yep.
And I will do it morning, noon, night, weekends, middle of the night, and I will do it back to back to back to back to back, like no matter what, and I'll do that for a decade.
Yep.
And I have found that that relentlessness is the difference.
Well, that's born out of your passionate to help, right? I see the different things that you get involved in, and they're all things that you are prepared. The things that you feel match your passions. You know, look what you've done with the school PNC, and you've taken it on a whole different journey, I can imagine. It on the outside, it looks like it's run like no other PNC I've ever seen.
That's correct.
And I see that as a really pleasant proposition. It seems to be that you're running that, hey, how can we get people to want to get involved rather than badgering people that they have to get involved? And you're doing the same with Brisbane Small Business, and I see that. You're bringing a high level of education for people who want to follow and dig into that and lean in. But if people just want a 3-second soundbite, they're not the people that you're interested in helping so much.
You're spot on, because I invest in the individual. And it's the same conversation that I have with anyone that'll listen to my advice, is that, you know, when they talk about building their brand and building all these things, it's being mindful that the other brand you have to build is you, because that's a huge part of the world we live in now, is that you know, the CEOs aren't hidden like they used to be. You know, they've got a Twitter handle and they've got a LinkedIn and they've got a blog and they've probably got a podcast. And, you know, people in senior management are very accessible to a point that they've never been before. So, yes, you've got to advertise your company, but there's this whole new age now where you have to advertise yourself as the beacon of that company.
Yep.
What do you stand for? What do you represent? How do you, you know, approach life? Because something that I say repeatedly, and I love a good catchy saying, but, you know, how you do something is how you do everything.
Yep.
And you see that. And if you're not demonstrating that outwardly, you know, if your online footprint is a shambles and your personal pages are rarely updated, like, okay, it's interesting. You know, if comms is your business,
yep,
and you're not real good at them and you're not real consistent at them, how many other things are you dropping?
Yep.
And the answer is probably quite a few. And these are, you know, these are just my personal takes on things and they're my personal assessments, because these are the things that I look at when I'm, you know, investigating people the way that you would investigate, you know, a recruit.
Yep.
Back in the day, is these are the measures that I look at, because I look at what they do. Yep. I look at their tonality, and I, because it's very telling. There's, you know, there was somebody I was testing recently, and I would watch them complain on the internet, and that's very telling. You know, when you've got big bundles of sadness that you want to share with the world, and that's the highlight of your day that you believe is the most important thing that you've done all day, and then you need to put that on a public forum, like, we get it, mate. Everybody is fighting a battle you know nothing about. You today will be fighting battles. I today am fighting battles.
Were you about to recruit Prince Harry?
I'm not even touching that one. Mate, that man's got 99 problems and he really shouldn't. It's a really interesting time that we operate in.
It is.
Where, you know, we have the opportunity to do these things.
Yeah.
And it's bloody great. And things like Brisbane Small Business allow you the opportunity, because as I was sort of alluding to, like, one of the things that you said to me that I had to do when we started was you said, all right, you gotta go live every week. You gotta go live with, you know, some information, some news, some tidbits, some thingamajigs. And I make and film and do all sorts of stuff for a living, but I'm not on camera. I'm behind the camera. Mate, I pointed at people and then talked them through. And I had all the same problems that, you know, most of my clients do when you point a camera at people and they go, you know, very well spoken, and then all of a sudden you can't get a sentence out.
Well, that's it. We discussed how my friend said, you know, Kevin, hey, your stuff these days is okay. You know, when you started, you were crap. And I said, thanks, I've improved to okay.
And that's the joy.
You know, and how much easier is your 101st?
Oh, mate. And I've kept every one of my podcasts, you know, right back from the start, I've kept them all live, even though I cringe. Like, when I go back and look at them or listen to them, I'm like, wow, that sucks so bad. But what I like about that is I am being vulnerable and transparent with that journey, so that as it improves, you could actually listen through the journey and you can hear the ones where I forgot to push record on the audio deck and it's picked up the sound off the other camera and, you know, it's a train wreck and you can hear the ambulances going past and because, you know, we're on a major road here. And, you know, this is sort of setup number three, because when I started doing this, I was doing videos of myself, you know, holding the camera out and talking to it, you know, a bit of g'day guys, you know, the old g'day guys, and talking about marketing things. And what I realized is I don't want to hear myself talk about marketing things. And then I also realized that what I really like doing is talking to other people. And I went, I like this, because in my job I have to interview people on camera and,
yeah,
you know, get stories out of them, and same in the marketing stuff, like, I get people to tell me their stories. So I have developed a skill set of drawing stuff out of people. But what I didn't know how to do is I didn't know how to talk to camera, I didn't know how to interview, and I sure as hell didn't know how to podcast.
Yep.
Because something I did, and my brother alerted me to this, was when you are having a conversation with people, you inadvertently make the noises. You go, and you acknowledge.
I've probably been doing that all interview.
You have. I didn't want to point it out. But look, you make all those things, and face-to-face they make sense. They're the appropriate noises to make while you're interacting. But when you're listening to it in your car driving along, it's not great. And Tim said to me, he's like, mate, you've really got to watch that. You know, don't make the noises, just shut up and just let the person talk. And oddly, that's a skill I had to practice over probably 5 or 6 podcasts, was just learning to shut up.
It is a skill.
It's really hard to do. And what I find is I'll sit here across from somebody and I'll do the eyes and like I'll do the nod and the but without the noise. So I attempt to engage non-verbally so that the soundtrack that we lay down actually has that reasonably neat flow to it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But all these things I've learned as a result of my involvement. Like if I hadn't have got involved in Brisbane Small Business, if I hadn't have been grilled through the process, if I hadn't have made, my shitty talking to myself videos and then got annoyed at making shitty talking to myself videos and then gone, oh, I should get a guest on. And like my first podcast were I think like 5 minutes or something, because like it just sort of ran out of puff at about the 5 minute mark. And then I went, hang on, maybe I'm doing all this wrong. And I got one of my friends on, Maddie, who is an artist. There's actually 2 of his artworks in here hanging on the wall, the big canvases. And he was the first big podcast I ever did. And he and I think, chatted, I think it was nearly 3 hours. It was like 2.5 hours or something silly. And that was the one I left that just charged, like totally pumped, just loved it, like just buzzing. And every time I do this now, every time I have a guest, every time I chat to someone, I'm buzzing for like 3 or 4 hours afterwards, because I've had that opportunity to get to know somebody better, to share their story, to give a platform to it. And I just really enjoy that. And if I hadn't have been through all those steps, those failures, those things that you insisted that I had to do that I really didn't like doing, but because I'd committed to you and I refused to say, I don't really like that, I just buckled in and did it anyway. And that has evolved into this. So I get to thank you for, all of this that's here now and all the money I spent on it. Shh, don't tell anybody. Because, if I'm going to do it, I in for a penny, in for a pound. So I went and I've kitted it out properly, and now you're here in the studio that I've actually even started to deck out with all my toys and all my stupid things and, all my little trinkets that I've collected.
You've got a lot of little memories in the background there.
Mate, when you look through that memory, there's just some of the most beautiful things, like my very first camera, so the 1D Mark II and the Aston Martin team that I raced with and, Frozen and all these wonderful things and the drifting guys that I worked with and Aston Martin stuff and like just really all these beautiful memories. And would you believe it, this actually came from one of our clients, all the Blue Label stuff. Each one of those has a whole story behind it, each little thing. And I keep all those to remind me because they make me smile and they remind me of those times and they remind me of those challenges so that I don't forget. And you're sort of reminded of where you were and how big those moments felt at that point in time. Like some of that stuff that, is reflected there, some of those moments were just like earth-shattering. And over the years we've gone, oh, God, how could it get any bigger than this? And I've stopped saying that these days because I've just allowed the journey to roll, because I'm really happy with where it is and the things that I'm doing now.
Which is an interesting thing, and I'm going to turn around and be interviewer for a second.
Hit me.
So you've got your Living the Dream brand, or Keep Living the Dream brand.
Yes.
And it's just bubbling away in the background.
Yes.
So if you let that bubble away for the next 5 years, what do you see that becoming?
I know what I see it becoming, and I also know what I see it not becoming. And this is really interesting. So I'm much better now at seeking out a mentor, because I have the confidence to walk up and ask, would you believe it? And I went to the 4x4 show in Brisbane because, you know, my thoughts always are when you're doing something, just look at the best in, you know, your city, your country, the world. Look at whoever you think is doing that thing the best and model their behavior. Odds are they'll point you in the right direction. One of the fellas in Australia who I think does an extraordinary job is Pat Callanan. So Mr. 4x4, he's had a, you know, I think he's up to his 14th season. And I knew that he was going to be at the 4x4 show in Brisbane because he works with a company that I also work with, Exitrax, and they also own Mean Mother, who, you know, I run on my Land Cruiser. And so I was going to say good day to all the Mean Mother people and make some reels and make some content and all these things. But my singular goal for that day was to meet Pat, leave enough of a memory with him that I could follow him up.
Awesome.
And go from there. And so I did that, and it turns out he's a really nice fella. And I went, because, you know, you don't know. You know, when you see people, you know, TV personalities, all that sort of stuff, you're not sure. And
yep.
You know, there's a big don't meet your heroes, and I've met a lot of very, very famous, like, international superstar type people, and some of them are real dicks. And I also understand that a lot of that is to insulate themselves because they just have so many people coming up to them, so that now when I meet those sort of people in the lines of work that I do, I don't give, you know, I'm just like, yep, g'day. What's going on? All right, let's get on with it. Like, no selfies, no oohing and ahhing. I don't care how famous they are. It's like, yep, g'day. And just the same as you and I are chatting here. I don't give it any more or any less than that. Just exactly the same. And so obviously very pleasant experience meeting him. We continued to banter. And then I asked him if I could catch up with him, you know, the old, you know, I'll buy you lunch. And he was at a show in Sydney. So I flew down for the day just to catch up with him. And what I did at that event was I took my laptop down so I could work, and I sat there and I just watched, because he was on the main stage doing his presentation and stuff, and I watched all the people that are like your YouTube influencer travel people, and I watched all of them tell their stories of how they, you know, I once wished I could go and travel and get paid for it and all these things, and now I'm sponsored by X, Y, and Z and something else. And I watched all of that because I had this thought in my head that, you know, maybe I could do something like Pat. Maybe I'd have a TV show. Maybe I'd get sponsored by a car company. And as I sat there watching that, it undid all my plans. Because do you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to sit at a caravan and camping show in Sydney for 3 days on behalf of my sponsors telling them about how I one day wanted to go travelling Australia. Interestingly, I don't want to follow that path at all. What I want to do is do it under my own steam. Because I had this idea, because obviously, you know, I work with Mean Mother, who are a client of my business TPR, and I just said to them, I said, yeah, look, you know, I make some stuff. I got this silly old car. And I thought, you know, we'll give it a run. And they were kind enough to say, yeah, give it a go, see what happens, pretty low risk. But I'm going to stop at that. I'm just going to stick with them for as long as they'll have me. I'm not going to bring anybody else on. It's just going to be mine, because do you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to let go of control. Because what I watched is once you got 20 brands on board, you are beholden to them. And all of a sudden, it can't go the way that I might want it to go. And you've known me long enough to know that I love a good snap decision, and I will change tack based on the way the wind is blowing and go, nah, don't like that anymore, go the other direction. Because I'm big on the old sunk cost fallacy, where people go, oh, yeah, you've got to follow it through, you've got to see it through. Go, no, mate, you've got to be able to change. You know, if the weather's changing and the winds are changing, and if you can smell the change in the air, mate, you've got to move, and you've got to move fast. You know, super aggressive, high speed, go. So what I'm doing is I'm actually leaving this weekend on my very first Living the Dream traveling exercise, and I am going to beta test what the future might look like. I am taking my production gear and I am going to film with my phone, with my cameras, take stills, and I'm just going to do my thing. So I'm going down to Coonabarabran, and I'm specifically stopping there because that's where I blew up my Land Cruiser gearbox coming home from Bathurst.
I was going to say that sounds familiar.
Yeah, because there's a wonderful little Chinese restaurant there, because this was a very sad time. You know, I'm coming home from Bathurst. I've just been there with the Forza Brakes TCR race team that I did a season with last year. And, yeah, my gearbox overheated and cooked itself and had to get towed into Coonabarabran. I had my mechanic Sean and his dad were there in a second car. And so I paid for accommodation for us at the motel because, like, it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. We weren't getting out of there. And out the front of this motel was, like, the classic Australian, think 1970s, 1980s Chinese restaurant. And, like, oh, mate, playing the greatest hits, you know, all the very best Chinese dishes. And then my favourite part was they had $6 crown lagers. And my mechanic, Sean, who's, I think he's low-mid 20s, he'd never even had a crown lager. And he didn't realise that that was the pinnacle of beers in Australia in the 90s. I mean, that was, you know, I'd buy those for Christmas.
So I wonder if there's going to be a resurgence of that.
Look, I hope there is. I mean, it's pretty basic, actually, compared to the craft beers. But when you ask where is Living the Dream going, like, it operates as my research and development brand. It's where I test ideas. It's where I do things. It's where I test my theories in, you know, comms and new media, because it's very low risk for me. It's just dumb stuff. But what it allows me to do is it allows me to test reasonably aggressively new media in real time, amass data, and then utilise that data to roll out for my clients. Because there's something that I've always said to anyone I've ever worked with: I will never ask you to spend your money on something that I haven't spent my own money on. Anything I recommend, I have tested with my own dollars out of my own pocket, and I recommend it because I know it works, because I made it work. So that's a long but short story of where that's going. I just want to keep doing silly things.
So any truth to the rumour that Living the Dream Crocs are on the horizon?
Look, I keep tagging Crocs because, you know, they've really got, you know, I mean, what else would that, I mean, you know, a solid middle-aged influencer. I'm sure that they'll get there in the end, that they'll come around and go, this is the guy that we want on our billboards. I could just see that now, actually, like with my little Legionnaires cap, you know, with the little flappy cap and the pit vipers, because I've actually moved to winter Croc uniform. So I'm wearing, so like your business socks. So I've got my business socks pulled halfway up, up the ankles, up to the calf.
Excellent.
And then the Crocs on. I'm not wearing those today. I've actually got my gym shoes on because, well, I'm a pig and I went to the gym and haven't showered. Sorry. So I haven't switched into Crocs yet today because I'm a grub.
Fortunately, the desk is this white.
That's what happens when you ask. Absolutely. It's my executive dysfunction, mate. I can't do the most basic things.
No, look, it's awesome that you can use that in a way to both, you know, do the stuff that you love doing and yet use it in a way that you can incorporate it into how you can deliver for others.
Correct. And that was one of the things that I struggled with, was I'm like, how do I test this stuff? Because I need to – there's so much new media stuff coming out. And when, you know, vertical format started becoming a big thing, you know, cinematographers in particular were like freaking out going, 16:9, it's the only way, you know, you can't. And I'm like, nah, mate. I'm just like, I took my red camera and flipped it on its side and I'm like, boom, you know, we're shooting vertical and we're shooting it in 8K. I'm not precious. I don't care. Like, I care about the art. I care about the quality. I care about the story. But I'm not fussed on the delivery platform. Like, whatever the platform is, I'm like, cool, man, let's try that. We'll roll with that. But you have to try that because you've got to make the mistakes.
Yep.
And, you know, TikTok came out of nowhere and, you know, made vertical video, you know, it decimated the other platforms. And you've seen that in the way that Instagram and Facebook are now pushing Reels and YouTube has Shorts. You know, they're all because they're all trying to get your attention, because the one thing that TikTok did that, you know, Facebook and Instagram and, you know, YouTube to a degree didn't have was the addictive nature of those short format vertical videos. They're a time sink like nothing else. And as I've sort of talked to you about, eyes on platform is what their business is. And the fact that they can keep eyes on platform is why all the competitors are now trying to play in that game. And
absolutely.
So, you know, at this moment in time, that's what you've got to be good at. You know, in 2011, you had to be good at email marketing. What you got to be good at changes, but the story, the strategy, that stuff, that all stays pretty consistent. So you just got to keep getting good at whatever the new thing is.
So let me ask a different question then. So obviously you're keeping ahead of the marketing learning curve. And yet, do you feel that there's this people are feeling less connected? People are feeling they want more of a relationship again because they felt that although they can have a million followers, they've got very little engagement.
Spot on, mate. You got the finger in the air. You're feeling the wind change. I have felt the exact same change where people now know that the online personas, it's all bullshit. Like there's literally whole TikToks about like Instagram reality versus, you know, when you're doing it for the gram. And there's all the travel ones where it shows, you know, the beautiful glamour travel shot and then it shows like all the rubbish in the background and 10,000 other tourists. People are acutely aware that it's trash. And there are a significant number of younger people that move away from these platforms because they've seen, you know, these platforms that we're on, that you and I are now talking about, they're aging up. And that's not good for these platforms. You know, that's really dangerous for them because they'll become, you know, a MySpace wasteland if they don't age down and attract, you know, and that's why, you know, there have been products like Snapchat and stuff that have been very popular because they were too hard for older people to figure out. And so they attract a younger audience because, you know, grown-ups get on them and like, oh, what is this? And kids have to have a fake Instagram account to hide it from their parents. And there's all this sort of stuff going on. And that's – some of that can be the beginning of the end. You know, that can be the early signs of the end of the Roman Empire. And what you're talking about, that face-to-face connection, there is a thirst for that like I haven't seen in a long time. And a lot of that obviously is because we all got shut away from each other for so long. And now that we are allowed back out again, like I even had a moment during the week where I was in a crowded room and I was like, I was sort of freaking out a little bit because I was so close to so many people, which is a really weird feeling because, you know, I didn't used to have that feeling, but, you know, when we're all told for 2 years that everybody's going to die, you know, that really changed your perspective on being in a closed space with people. But what I have been witnessing is the need for that deeper connection. And honestly, I think it's the reason why podcasts have blown up so much is that, you know, you get the opportunity to listen to this after the fact, but feel connected to the two guests. You know, you could easily be a person in this room, and it's something that you only get from this format that is like, it's not scripted, it's not like this is hot, this is coming off the press, we're not stopping and re-editing, and there's something really nice about that. And that comes back to that genuine connection. And I'm old enough, and you're definitely old enough, to remember things like belly-to-belly sales. And, you know, in the 80s, like, that was the jam. And, you know, that's not really a phrase that you'd hear much these days because the idea of the fat, long-lunching business person is pretty far gone. What was that? They got rid of those loopholes in the early 90s, I think. Something they should bring back, long lunching, I think. That really needs to make a comeback. It'd be so good for small business. but that belly-to-belly sales, that's coming back. Like, that is the thing. Spend time in the rooms, time together, you know, building things together, experiences together.
Absolutely. And it's something that I think there is a huge hunger for. And there's so many different formats, which is great because it's not a one-size-fits-all. It really is different styles suit different personalities and different businesses. So it's a real opportunity there, I think, for a lot of traditional businesses in how they can approach that sort of thing and mixing up and not just going, we've always got to go. It is a real back-to-the-future moment.
Really is. Like, the whole trajectory of where everything was going changed. And one of the big changes that we saw in our industry, and, you know, it's all just become normal now, but uptake of, you know, purchasing over the internet and all these sort of things, the outsourcing of stuff and online accessibility, I watched it jump 5 years forward in about 6 months as people were online shopping for the first time, online groceries for the first time, door-to-door delivery, and the Amazon Prime rolled out in Australia and next day delivery. I still remember being astonished, being able to order something and then it being here the day after, because in Australia we've never seen anything like that. And all this stuff, like, we've just seen a huge change because of what's happened these last couple of years.
Yeah, and look, I don't think it's finished, but I do think it's going to go forward in a hybrid fashion where there will be that reach back for old school stuff to be complementing your new strategies.
Oh, without a doubt. And I firmly believe that because you see it. Everything old is new again. Like, I'm really enjoying 90s fashion taking off again. Stuff I've been holding on to for 30-odd years is all cool again. Mate, I bought a rusty shirt the other day. I was so excited.
Excellent.
Yeah, no, it's shocking. But it will. There'll be a renaissance of it. And, you know, we're strapped in for more hard times because, you know, I think we're well and truly into technical recession now. We're past two quarters going backwards, if I remember correctly. Could be wrong. You're the money man.
Can't tell you yet.
Yeah. But, you know, there's rough times ahead. But I've also come to appreciate that it is whatever you make it.
And I was about to say, tough times create a lot of opportunities. Hey, I could have just sat there and complained about my dog chewing its bed, right? Wherever there is a problem, there are more opportunities.
And I was saying this to somebody during the week. When others are greedy, be fearful. When others are fearful, be greedy. And that's, you know, the master investor Warren Buffett. And it wasn't that many years ago, you know, there was a big run on crypto and people were like, you know, when Lambo trying to turn $10 into $1 million. They were scary times. And that was just pre-COVID, when things were actually, it was pretty strong. Market was pretty strong. Confidence was pretty high. You know, things were going well. And then there was just this huge run, you know, when Bitcoin went to 100 grand and, you know, like, it was just madness. It was chaos. And that was, I find that to be a very relevant example of, you know, people were so greedy with that stuff. And I watched it unfolding as, you know, everyone became a crypto expert and everyone was day trading and all these things. And, mate, tell me the last time you saw one of those people posting. You know, that stuff's all gone because currently they're trying to figure out how to pay their mortgage as it goes to 5.89% from 2%, and it jumps from, you know, 2 grand to 5 grand a month. And people that leverage themselves too hard, they're going to get crushed. Like, they're going to get crushed. And that's coming, and that's only just starting to unfold now. At the next 12 months, there's going to be a full-blown bloodbath.
Look, I'm not going to agree entirely with you there, and I have a slightly different philosophy. One, it's in no one's interest in Australia for property to go down, particularly not the banks. So the banks are going to make sure that they walk a very fine line where they're not creating a run on property because they can't sustain it, right? And when you have, you know, predominantly four banks with a few spares controlling the market, and they really are controlling the market, at the moment they're profit-taking, but what they're already starting to bring down their fixed rates at a time when the Reserve Bank's still increasing, they're bringing their fixed rates down, right? So that to me says that they feel it's gone far enough, that any further pressure is going to ultimately cause pressure for them, so they're not going to do that. And I look at it more from a behavioural point of view than a purist economic point of view. So with that, yes, times are going to be tough for a lot of people. However, those that are prepared to step out of that reality and go, so what does everyone need now and how can I help them, then those people are going to flourish. And there's the opportunity. As I said, when people are hurting, they want connection. They don't want in your face, but they want greater connection. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity in communities. I think that there's a lot of opportunity within neighbourhoods. And I think you'll find a different... The funny thing about COVID, I found, was, you know, walking my dogs for the last, you know, 10 years in the morning, first thing in the morning, Melissa goes off and does Pilates and I walk the dogs. And the really hilarious thing during COVID was so many more people were walking the streets as a family, right? And you'd never seen these people before.
Never, no.
And yet all of a sudden families are out enjoying each other and time and waving to neighbours and saying hi and, you know, having more conversations. It was a lovely time. It seemed like the world just took a bit of space and slowed down a little bit, which was absolutely lovely. And I think there's room for that still coming up as people, as we're, you know, the human race is constantly evolving, and I think that the next wave of that is we're going to bring back a lot more of that human element.
Tell you what, I really hope so, because I had the same experience, and I'm certainly far more connected with my local community now, because I felt very disjointed in my local community. I was the same as you. You know, I'd always wave at people and say g'day, but that's about all you'd get. Mm. Whereas we had people, you know, we'd just build our house and we didn't have a fence or landscaping. We were just sitting in dirt with a couple of camp chairs and a fire, and people would walk along the footpath and just stop and say g'day because we were at enough metres where we weren't going to get ourselves in trouble. And I met more neighbours in that time than I have in the 12, 13, 14 years that I'd been there previously that I met in that. And, you know, that's actually been a huge thing. So, I've got to agree with you on that point.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And as, you know, Australians are great at coming together in hard times.
Agreed. So we are good at that.
So let's hope they do.
Now, I'm going to wrap this up, but what I'd like is how could people follow you, Kevin, and your personal brand, so the Kevin Gammy, Brisbane Small Business, and then also True Proof Dog Beds?
See, that's a funny thing. So it's great that we had the talk this morning about I've got to get more accountable to what I put online. Thank you.
Pleasure.
For that. Look, you can find Kevin Gammy, one. There's only one Kevin Gammy. There's not many of those out there, G-A-M-M-I-E. So that's very easy to find. Brisbane Small Business, we're a Facebook community. It is a private group. You've got to ask to join along, but basically we'll let you in. That's the secret. As long as you're going, and you can stay there as long as you're going to be a good human being. So we want it to be, and we're making sure that it is a safe place for people that, you know, you can ask questions that you might go, oh, this might be a dumb question. Feel free to get in there to ask those questions and help out. If you want to join our networking community, there's opportunities there. And we will be meeting monthly in relation to that. There'll be a little bit of education, a little bit of networking, but it's very much an easygoing thing. So we want to bring back that true sense of being part of something without all of the high pressure. You've got to be there every week and there's all these rules around it and all that sort of stuff. So really what we're trying to do is provide an opportunity for people to engage at the level that they want to engage. And so there's that side of it. True-proof dog beds, you might see a bit of a theme here. I'm not smart enough to think of smart names, so I just call stuff what it is. It is an indestructible dog bed because Jasper was an absolute genius at uncovering a weakness and exploiting it. So we started bringing these dog beds. As I said, we're dealing with a lot of councils, a lot of kennels, a lot of and even the RSPCA. You know, we do live what we say, and they are absolutely true proof. So if you've got a dog and you're sick of buying dog beds, check us out for sure.
And what's the website?
It's trueproof.com.au.
Well, that's easy to remember. And then I'll obviously put all this in the show notes so that you can just click at those and you don't have to remember this. But Kevin, thank you for taking the time today, mate. It's lovely to have you here and to talk this through and just to learn a little bit more about Kevin the man and the journey that you've been on to get yourself here and then where you're going next.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's been a joy.
Mate, always good fun. Well, until next time.